You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 323. This week, we talk about G.I. Joe, Volume 3. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now,
the cast begins.
Giving us a bump. As I told them on our Facebook chat earlier today, since you've joined the show, our Twitch streaming audience has increased by 200%.
Yeah, welcome.
So thank you for that.
Brought that Twitch niche.
I'm looking right now, and I think there's a bump today because some G.I. Joe Twitter account retweeted my thing. So we have a couple people. Yep. South America. No, sorry.
I don't even know what the link to our
South Africa.
Send me a link to our South Twitch.
Africa. It's my Twitch. Twitch.tv/JollyAndy.
Okay.
Sweet. South Africa.
Yeah.
Like, if they ever saw G.I. Joe, it's probably because, I don't know, they probably got it as, like, Freedom Force or whatever god-awful nonsense they called it in Europe.
I don't know. But they're called G.I. Joeberg.
That's
which
so awesome.
Is phenomenal. I love that.
Yeah, shout out to South Africa, G.I. Joeberg, because that's wicked. I love it.
That's such a fantastic name for a South African-based G.I. Joe fan club.
I'm into it. I like it. It's better than any of the fan clubs I've heard of up here.
Dude, so I'm listening. I'm catching up on a bunch of old... I started out listening to The Journey, which is a Star Trek Voyager podcast, and I caught all the way up with that. The problem is that Trek FM, the network they belong to, has like 36 Star Trek themed shows, so I've been like catching up on all those, and I'm going through the TNG one right now. And they did a whole episode on cosplay and costuming. And there's like, so you know how there's the 501st, there's the Mandalorian Mercs, there's apparently Starfleet International. And there's two ships that you can join here in the Bay Area. One is a correspondence-based. It's the USS Gygax. So it's like gaming over email, Star Trek themed. Sounds awesome.
Oh my goodness.
Let me see what there's one here in Campbell, California, too. The USS Augustus Ada. It's an Olympic class. You remember the finale, the weird ship that Beverly was captain of?
Yeah, with like Dr. Crusher's ship.
Yeah, with like a big ball on the front. Apparently that's ours here in Campbell.
It's the same shape as my microphone.
Oh, is it an Olympic? I think it's an Olympic class.
I guess I should leave all fouling jokes at the door here.
Oh, yep.
No, this is... I mean, you could, but it's not really for kids, so...
No.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll just keep it tasteful then.
Thanks for reining it in for us.
You're welcome. Could have really taken it off the deep end there.
But yeah, I think anyway. It's cool. I forget that there's probably like groups out there for everything, and probably should have gotten in some of those earlier. Like, there was a year that, who was it? Myself, Mitch, Brian, Shelby all went as henchmen to Comic-Con. From Venture Brothers. We went to the Venture Brothers henchmen. And we had a fucking great time. But there's like no organized cosplay for that group now. But now there is. There's an organized henchmen like cosplay group. I was like, man, we could have gotten in the ground floor there. Except now I haven't seen Venture Bros in like 5 years. I haven't watched
about,
a single episode in a long time.
How long has it been since the last season?
More than that, then. Because
they take their sweet time when they redo this, when they do a season of that show. It takes like a good 3 years at least.
Yeah.
And right now, literally as we're talking like 5 seconds ago, Jackson Public tweeted that Venture Bros are coming back this summer. So apparently, nice. They are the car coming out with another season.
They were like, "Oh, they must be watching the stream," and we're like, "Andy's complaining."
Like, what, people are complaining? We better get that shit out now. There's four people on Twitter or Twitch. One of those.
All from South Africa.
Hey, there's more than three people.
They gotta get that sweet South African demo.
Yeah, I know, right? Better not talk too much shit.
You know, Andy, you can. It's not too late to get into these costuming groups.
No, I know. No, I know. Well, it's going to be soon once the baby comes. Then I'll have like a couple months where I can't really do much of anything. But I know. I need
to. But then, as soon as they're out of high school, you're getting right back into that shit.
Dude, you know, you make that joke.
I took it to a dark place.
No, because it makes me think our buddy Mitch, his dad, Jim, is like that. Like, he retired, and now I have like Steam on my computer at work. Not my work computer, but like I have a little like Surface that I just take to work, and it's just, you know, it's a background app. And he's always playing something. I'm like, man, you know how to retire. And I can see he's like working through his back catalog, because when he first retired, it was games that were like 10 to 15 years old, and now it's games that are like 8 years old. And I'm like, are you going in order, bro? Because that's pretty awesome if you are.
That's pretty epic right there.
He's like, if like he's been making a list of all the games he didn't have time to play.
Yeah, every time I get into a thing where I'm like, I'm gonna get this backlog all sorted out, I play like three games. I'm like super proud that I like played through three games, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done gaming for like 6 months.
Yeah, I know. That's how I go in waves like that. Like when Subnautica came out, I was super into it, and then I haven't played it in a couple months. But for whatever reason, I started playing Dawn of War 2 again.
Damn, sick.
The game just doesn't get old to me. Like, I could keep playing it over and over again.
Dawn of War or God of War?
Dawn of War.
Dawn of War.
I do have God of War. I have God of War on my PS4, which is a pretty great game. But yeah, Dawn of War is really fun.
Okay.
I really like the idea of Warhammer 40K. I've obviously, I played the computer games, and I've read one of the novels. Which is actually pretty good. It was written by Dan Abnett, who's the guy who did my favorite run on Guardians of the Galaxy. Apparently, he's actually written a crap ton of Warhammer 40K novels.
Sweet.
But the idea of actually playing the game like terrifies me, though. Because it's so expensive, and I have to paint. And I already don't have time to play other games that I want to play.
We have, like, two spare armies, I think. If you want to talk to Grant to borrow stuff, he's not using it right now.
Sounds like it's time for a war in the mountains.
But no, seriously, like, I'm sure he'd loan stuff out, because like his stuff is mostly painted, it is assembled, and he hasn't used it in a while, and it's just sitting there. It's kind of sad.
Well, that's like my X-Wing miniatures are just sitting.
Man. I know. Me too.
And they came out, they redid the rules, to they're coming out with edition two, which like fixes all the balancing issues and stuff. And what they're doing is, so their cards and stuff and the stats have changed on a lot of the ships. So you can buy a conversion kit. It's like $50 for each faction. But it gives you like all the cards and everything that you need.
I'm in the same boat. Like, I really want to play X-Wing, and I miss playing X-Wing, but I'm also, it's not one of those I feel bad about. Like, I got into HeroClix, and now there's just a ton of like HeroClix laying around. Nothing to do with. But at the very least, the X-Wing minis look really good on my shelf. I got the Corvette, the Blockade Runner, and that thing looks sick, and I have the Millennium Falcon out next to it, and that looks like it looks there to scale almost, you know? It's cool. So like I don't feel as bad about that.
Yeah, well, like the smaller, the non-huge ships are all to scale with each other.
But I still have my Star Wars minis, guys. So, you know, if you want to fire that up again.
Dude, yes.
I know you guys got those sitting in the garage.
It is broken as fuck,
but I can actually see them from where I'm sitting. Because they're in such a...
Well, like, not only do I have my Star Wars minis, but I also have my brother's Star Wars minis. So, yeah, I have like, I got a rockin' collection if ever there was any opportunity to play again, which they probably won't be.
Is there a Yoda on a Kaibuck in your collection?
Man, fuck that thing.
Two of them.
Because that is the one that almost broke friendships.
That almost broke David. I remember that day.
Yeah, I was like, I like stormed off, and then I realized that I was acting stupid, so I came back. I was like, "This is
no,
what
I mean,
am I doing?
You wanted to have
I
fun.
I just gotta say,
you wanted to have fun.
David, you're a consummate gamer. You're a delightful person to you know, like, butt heads with on the battlefield of gaming, because usually you got like just the coolest head and like, you know, you're like a challenging person to play against, right? And
really
for the most part,
that.
Very pleasant, right? And in that moment, when I saw you lose your shit after that, I was like, God damn. Like, that was brutal. Like, that was hard to see. Because I know, like, if I were in your shoes, I would have done the same goddamn thing. And I'm like...
Yeah, that was like my darkest day. I was ready to, like, flip the table. But, you know, I feel bad because I got mad at your brother and stuff, but... it's not his fault. It just happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't even think he was as affected by that as, like, the rest of us were. Because we, like, knew exactly what happened. We knew he was right. We knew there was nothing we could do to, like, to fix this particular monstrosity of a scenario that we had just set up.
Yeah.
Through, like, so... I mean, essentially, what we did with the game was... It's very faction-based, right? And if you're not going to stick to the faction, you need to stick to, like, good guys versus bad guys. And we just brought down all of those barriers and went, let's just go for it. And then, of course, my brother just decided to make the most nonsensical, crazy-ass army, this task force like, infinite pain.
No. Okay. That was the cleanup part of it. What happened was that David was like, I like Mandalorians. I want to play Mandalorians. I want to play as many Mandalorians as I can. So he played like a big squad of Mandalorian troopers and spread them out, because they're Mandos. They do well spread out. And then your brother fucking played Yoda on a like horse, which of course Yoda on a mount is just going to like saw through motherfuckers.
And that's exactly what happened.
What's frustrating about it is that in game you see it happening. And you know it's all going according to the rules, so it's going the way it's supposed to, even though it's brutal and hard to watch. And you also know on the other side of it, like, canon-wise, that kind of makes sense. Yoda would do that. Like, that's the worst part of it. You can't even call bullshit, like, this is dumb lore, this would never happen. Like, no, that's exactly how that would happen.
Yeah,
in that scenario, with those circumstances, that's absolutely what would have happened. Yeah, so it was brutal. And we tried. We tried to be like, you know, we were like, maybe no. Like, we were trying to let it not work. And even my brother was just like, if it doesn't work, that's fine. I don't care. But I'm pretty sure if I'm interpreting it right, this is exactly what we could do. And we poured over that for about, like, 15 minutes. And we were just like, shit's legal, dude. And then David just was like, I gotta go. It's like, essentially, Sam just killed his entire fucking army in, like, one move.
Yeah, this is
pretty crazy ass setup.
Luckily, at the time, David was like, I'm going to fucking go home. And luckily, at the time, home was next door, like literally next door.
Yeah, he just assumed, like, walk out, go next door, come back like an hour later, like, okay, I'm cool.
Like, it was like 10 steps from my living room to your living room, so it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
This whole situation is just so unfathomable to me. Like, if you asked me, out of the people I know who is least likely to rage quit, I would say David. He's in the list of those people.
Well, do you want to get into this week's comic?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll skip right over the banner we actually had in the notes. This week, we read G.I. Joe Volume 3. This is one of the... I think this is the original run from Marvel from the way back when.
That's correct.
Volume 3 covers issues 21 to 30. We only read the first 5 because 10 issues is a lot to read. And, you know, I feel like after 5 issues, I got a decent handle on what happens here. Somebody gets kidnapped, and then there's a rescue op. Because that happened 3 times in, like, 5 issues.
let me tell you something. I read the whole thing, and we can get into it. It's weird.
Is it more rescue ops, or does it something actually come it's to like, a head?
Let's discuss what you read through it, and then I'll basically just elaborate on
the last issue I read was the one where they introduced Zartan.
Well, can we just like go even a little deeper? That issue ended with Zartan pointing a gun at a dog. And then it just like cuts out from, I mean, I know the trade goes on, but that's where I stopped. And I was like, this is kind of amazing.
You know what? And
you didn't flip to the next page. The next one has Destro petting the dog.
I'm about to say Destro straight up befriends that dog like a page later.
Well, I like how Zartan's like salty about it too. He's like, I didn't know you were a dog person.
And then he like says, like some has some life lesson about like getting along with animals or something. And you're just like, okay, whatever, weird dictator guy. I'll try and pull up the line. That's great.
I do appreciate the humor in this book because there's a lot in here and it keeps coming up. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to make a confession right now. This is by far the most exposure I have ever had to G.I. Joe. Before this, the most exposure I had was the Fensler Films redubbed PSAs.
Oh, like Bottom of Sark?
Yeah, which are fucking fantastic.
I love the one with the reggae song. That's the best one.
I like that. I like the "Hey Kid, I'm a Computer."
But if you guys think I didn't read this, and every time Roadblock was on page, I didn't go "Butter Massage," then you would be absolutely kidding, because I absolutely did that every single time I saw it.
I'm kind of sad that in this he doesn't like rhyme, because in the I guess it's kind of I don't know, maybe racist a little bit, but in the cartoon he rhymed, right? And I'm not just imagining that, right?
No, you're right. He did. And I think they did it, like, once in this comic, and then they just stopped. I think they, like made fun of it or something, and then they just, and then, like, the writer just, like, was like, okay, that's it. We're done with that.
Yeah.
Or is he, like, fine, yeah, assholes?
Yeah, it was really weird. It's just sort of like, he, like, rhymes once, so, like, what's all the rhyming? He's just like, I don't know. And then that was it. And then, like, it was over. At least that's a loose interpretation. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing, but that's about how it goes down in this.
He was pretty great, though. I did like Roadblock in this, and I like that he's like buds with Gung Ho. I liked his taste in food, like in the Swiss Alps, and he's like, "This is bullshit. This is not a good fondue. I want to order a raclette next place we go."
Right? He's just like, how dare you serve this with that, with this wine? Like, what are you running here? You know, like, this is nonsense. And then the next place they're like, they go to, they're like, is this better? It's like, oh yeah, no, this place is great.
And he like tells the waiter to compliment the chef. And
so good. The thing that always gave me problems with the cartoon is that, like, I love the weird tropes because it kind of, like, there's a lot of parallels between that Transformers where it's, like, the good guys are just unshakable good guys, and then the bad guys are, like, always, there's always infighting with the bad guys. And of course, it's made worse by the fact that pretty much everybody who voiced people in Transformers pretty much voiced their corresponding, like, you know, like, equal counterparts in G.I. Joe as well. So it's like, they're in both. So it's like, Starscream and Cobra Commander are the same freaking guy who voices both. Right? So there's like this weird, there are these weird parallels there. It's just kind of like, you know, it's hard not to like draw like very similar conclusions, but.
Yeah, except Cobra Commander is a fucking fantastic character.
He's wonderful.
Dude, I never watched the cartoons. I never read anything before this, really. And I fucking love Cobra Commander. I love the little mouth hole in his helmet. I love that I love that he hates poets. I love that he puts the secret lair underneath the burger place. Like, I love everything about him. And his insult, fool, a clam knows more than you.
So the funny thing about Cobra in this, the secret, so Springfield, Illinois, or wherever they are, the Cobra is, the whole town is Cobra.
Oh, because everyone in the burger place does.
Yeah,
the
they saluted him. Yeah.
Everybody there is. It's like a Cobra town.
Yeah, dude, it's like a Cobra company town. It's great.
Yeah,
I fucking love Cobra. It's like what's that place in New Mexico where they all where they do the nuclear bomb stuff?
White Sands.
No, the place up in the mountains.
There's a lot of mining towns down there too, like old school mining towns. They're still mostly the mining town.
Well, I forget the name of it. I'm sure if you Googled it, it would come up immediately. But basically, the place where they sent all of the scientists to go work on the atomic bomb was like this one town in New Mexico.
Los Alamos.
There we go, Los Alamos.
Yeah.
I've been there. It's great. But yeah, it's like it reminded me of that only for bad guys. I don't know. like just weird parallels there.
Man, there are just too many amazing things about this comic. I want to add to the list about Cobra Commander too. He is sniveling.
Yeah,
like it's so wonderful what a chump he is.
Yeah, and somehow he's the boss.
Yeah,
because
yeah, he's like, oh god, he's just like, he makes no sense, and everybody's just like, we're going to mess that guy up, and then it's going to be our turn. Like, and then it just never happens. And that's how the cartoon went, too. It's a freaking riot.
You know what, though? Because Cobra Commander is a fantastic lesson in how to manage. You find the most capable person, and you become their mentor, and you get them on your side. And then whatever anybody else tries to do, it doesn't matter, because you have the capable employee. Like, Storm Shadow? Is that the ninja's name? Like, all you need is fucking Storm Shadow. And if everybody else tries to pull some shit, you're fine.
if you didn't read far enough, even he's not even, like, all in, right? Like, his loyalty is 100% tied to a revenge plot. So yeah, but everybody is suspect. Everybody.
The later issues are Storm Shadow origin story.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I will keep reading that.
Okay.
Yeah, they do a Snake Eyes. In fact, actually, the issue right after where you stop is the Snake Eyes origin issue, which is like a two-part.
All right, then.
So, oh, and that line that Destro says about the dog, it's great. He goes, I knew an Eskimo once who said, a man who whips a dog will pull his own sled someday.
I'm pretty sure. So
what the hell?
I think that's the character Quinn. Remember, so in like the second issue, 22... Snake Eyes goes to bury somebody at sea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's an Eskimo named Quinn who, like, he's from the first trade. And he, at first, is, like, working for Cobra against the Joes. And then he becomes friends with Snake Eyes. And now he's a good guy. But then he dies. And I'm pretty sure that's the person that Destro's referring to.
That's awesome.
That's great.
I love the continuity.
Yeah, you know what I noticed about this? From start to finish, there's a line. You can just there's a continuous like story going through the whole thing. Which is for let's just say for that era of Marvel is like other than like a couple of rare exceptions, which are probably some of the best comics out there, not something they were in the habit of doing.
Yeah.
Well, like, I think the difference
you didn't read. I don't know, like, you didn't read, like, 10 issues of something and be like, okay, yeah, like, this is one story. Or it's like, or it was like an ongoing like, plot. Like, it would go from point A to point B to point C to point D. It was always like, here's a story arc, and then it was like, the next thing is the next story arc. This just seems to be like, there's clearly, like, a story that started before we read this, continues in through this, and clearly we'll pick up and go somewhere after this. So, I don't know. And that seems not usual, at least in my experience, of this era of comics, like the 80s and early 90s.
They did that, or they were, that it was like allowed to happen is because they just let Larry Hama do the whole thing for like a decade.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other time it happens, because it happened like this with Walt Simonson and Thor and Chris Claremont and the X-Men. And like you're saying, Gemini, those are some of the epically great all-time runs of Marvel Comics. You know, and it's like, if you just let the creator, if you tell them up front they're going to have the security of this job for a long time, then they can make these long games. Then they're not afraid to change a character because they know they've got 10 more issues to straighten it out. And it would take a long time with a cast this big, too. Like, we were talking about Roadblock and laughing, but he's only on a couple panels each issue. He's not there super highlighted all the time. He can't be. There's, what, 6 villains in this and, like, a dozen Joes? Like, there's too many characters to juggle. Especially when you have scene stealers like Cobra Commander. It gets tough.
Yeah, but I like how everybody kind of gets their own moment, though, at least.
Yeah.
I can think of just about any character that was in this, and I could be like, yeah, here's like a couple of moments that they had that stick out in my mind. Which is crazy, because like when we read Transformers, like we had problems with like stuff kind of like mashing together. And I think in this case too, like with the colors, because it was just these older comics and they didn't have a rich color palette to work with. Visually, a lot of these guys blended together, especially when they're wearing like fucking uniforms and stuff.
It's, yeah, they're like, all wearing that like, army green.
Yeah, it was like, okay, so basically I don't know who anybody is. But I mean, once you kind of like get to know the characters, and like once they're out doing stuff, you get to see them and like in sort of their unique whatever getup that they have going on, you're like, okay, makes an impression. And then when you like see their name on the page, you're like, oh yeah, that's that guy, or yeah, that's that guy. So despite those sort of like visual mashups, I think they did a really good job like developing the characters and allowing you to like really quickly put names to faces, even if those faces aren't very clearly defined.
Yeah,
later on, or at intervals.
I think sometimes because they take what feels like a stock character and give it just enough twist to make it a character that you remember. I'm thinking of Mutt and his dog Junkyard. Were kind of memorable, and that issue was Zartan. I want to say something else there, but I don't know. But there's just like the take characters that are like just the sniveling guy, or the incompetent guy, or the guy with the dog, and just give it a little bit more to make it feel like it has depth, even though it doesn't necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird because in most comics, when you have someone who just kind of fills a trope role, you forget who they are right away. But here, it's like, I could tell you who Gung Ho is. You know, I know who Roadblock is. And, I know Rock and Roll. Right? It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know if I remember Rock and Roll. I remember Gung Ho was the guy who had a mortar with him all the time. Like, they were chasing somebody down, and somebody was like, oh no, there's a sniper in the tree. Well, I'll fucking get rid of the tree. Like, why the hell do you just have a mortar with you?
Because he's a Marine.
Aren't, like, half of them, though? Anyway.
Yeah, wait. Someone explain to me why, at a, like, formal funeral at Arlington, they just let two dudes show up with, like, heavy artillery that can shoot down a plane.
Because they're Joes.
It's so absurd.
Yes, it is.
Hey,
yeah, that's
hey, if you're gonna introduce Duke and Roadblock, all right, into the comic, what better way to do it than at a funeral where they have to shoot down a freaking, was it a helicopter or was it a jet? I don't even remember.
It was a jet.
Yeah. Who else are you gonna like, that's how you introduce those characters. Oh yeah, this guy could just hold a 50 caliber machine gun, because like everybody could do that. And this other guy is just like so good with pistols he could like assist in shooting down a plane. You're just like, who are these guys? And it's like Duke and Roadblock. Oh yeah, no, they're badasses. Yeah, okay, cool.
You know what?
All right. You know, like you're just kinda like okay, I accept this.
You know what, you bring up Cobra Commander crashing the funeral, and that transitions to a topic I really wanted to talk about. because I think it was a couple episodes ago, I don't remember, when I was talking about like how so often you want to get up, you get want to get the point across how evil a villain is. So like the shorthand is like rape, or just they do something incredibly terrible. So you go, oh yeah, that's really a bad, bad person. I like that G.I. Joe is able to do that with like formalities and things that don't feel right, but are not obscene. Like Cobra Commander crashing a funeral to try and kill more Joes, like that's off limits. You know that's off limits. You don't have to like know any military this or that, or have any history of any of these characters. Like, you know immediately that's off limits. And anybody even thinking to do that is a bad guy. The Joes would not do that on the other side, you know? And it's like, it's great shorthand. It doesn't go too far. It's mostly etiquette, if you want to kind of call it that, human decency, but it immediately labels the kind of villain that he is.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a dick move, right?
Yeah, but it's like, mm-hmm. It's such a dick move. Like, he's not just a bad guy. He's a real bad guy, you know? And like,
he is like a true, like, anarchist. Like, he is an absolute terrorist. He is an absolute anarchist. Nothing is sacred, not even his own people.
Yeah.
And yet, he has this fiercely loyal following, and that always cracks me.
Yeah. And then, like, at the end, like, I know it ends up with Destro, you know, petting the dog and everything's okay, but, like, that last issue that we read, I think it was issue 25, Zartan's kind of a joke a little bit to me, and he's a little bit of a joke to Baroness, and then trying to make him prove his loyalty or whatever, and some stray dog shows up on his porch, and the first thing he wants to do is shoot it in the face. Like, no, bro. It's a random stray dog. Let it go, or give it dinner or something. Like, it's these little things that make me appreciate how you can so quickly develop how evil or how much of a bad guy the person is without having to be extreme. And I wish we get more of this not in G.I. Joe, not in something that's rated for everyone. Because these kinds of things, like crashing a funeral, that's more or less universal. You could use that as shorthand for anyone. Shooting a dog that's just looking for food, that's pretty much universally a bad, like, I appreciate that it doesn't go to the extremes. It has fun with its characters and still does all the things that it needs to do to show you who they really are without going too far.
Yeah, it wasn't in this comic, but I'm pretty sure it's part of an old G.I. Joe comic. But I had this picture that I downloaded, and it was from this comic. And it literally has this Cobra Commander just kicking a dog.
Oh.
Just straight up.
Yeah, bro,
just
no.
Just straight up just kicking a dog for whatever reason. And there was just something comical about it, and it just spoke to his character. Like, that just kind of, like, it made me chuckle, not because the dog was being kicked, because that's awful, but because it's like, man, classic Cobra Commander, just kicking a dog, you know, just because it was in his way.
And in contrast, like, I feel, like, you know, you see Cobra Commander crashing a funeral, Zartan pointing a gun at a dog, and then Destro doesn't actually do anything offensive. He just hangs out with the bad guys, right? Like, we're supposed to get that he's evil because he looks weird. But, like, his main thing is that he had Scarlet imprisoned in his tower. And then she got out and he's like, eh. And then he's like, he's upset because, like, the jet project has gone, like, off spec. And they're not doing the proper testing. He's like an angry project manager for Cobra.
Yes, that's exactly it. He's angry. Like, I was thinking, he's the guy who fights with spreadsheets. Like, he's going to out-supply line the Joes.
Well, my understanding of his character is he's like a wealthy... He's a wealthy guy, so he has, like... He's invested somehow in the world, but... Like, he's, like, thirsty for... He's, like, power-hungry, right? He's in this because, you know what I mean? Like, he's obviously at odds with world governments and whatnot. He doesn't really play well with them, but he's still a powerful guy with a lot of influence.
Yeah, he wants less governmental sort of, like, oversight.
Yeah, maybe he's a extreme libertarian. I don't know what's going on.
This is what it is. He wants Cobra Commander to rule the world so that he can get... So that he can get more freedom in his corporate career. Well,
he's just a late stage capitalist. Yes! Don't mind him.
No, it's funny, you guys joke. He's literally a weapons manufacturer.
See? Oh, yes.
Okay.
and he's like the arms supplier for Cobra.
Yeah, he's like an evil Tony Stark, I'm pretty sure.
He's even got a metal face also.
That's true. There you go. Lots of parallels there.
He's basically bad Iron Man.
And he's got wrist rockets, which is fucking badass.
Look at that collar. I mean,
oh yeah.
I'm a big fan of collars.
He rocks that collar.
Yeah.
That collar doesn't make sense. He's still rocking that collar.
Yeah. His outfit is like, what if Iron Man and Doctor Strange?
And Doctor Evil. Yeah. Not Doctor Evil. Like, Doctor Doom. He's like a mix of the three. He's like really weird. Yeah.
So,
Did you guys get to the part in the comic where, is it Roadblock or somebody like gets into a fist fight with him and they punch him in the face and they basically break their hand? He's like, are you an idiot? I have like titanium steel on my face.
No, but that sounds great.
It's great. Like, yeah. Okay. So it's a little bit past where you guys got to, but oh man, it's so good. Like he shows up to like basically like steal this bank to get away from, like to escape from something, of course. And, like, Roblox tries to stop him, and he just, like, throws a punch right in his face, and it's, like, you can see, like, the little, like, lightning bolts off his hand, like, oh, man, he really, like, messed his hand up. He's like, ah, right? He's just like, you're the biggest idiot ever. My face is, like, titanium and, like, blah, blah, blah alloy. Like, are you stupid? And then he just, like, clocks him, and then just, like, puts him out and then just like keeps doing what he's doing. It's just like, yep, you don't mess with that guy because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, you know, that does so that does lean into the whole like as fun as this is, I think it's fun because the characters themselves are fun, but the tropes that they represent aren't ones that I really like usually. In that you get the feeling that most of Cobra is smarter than the Joes. But the Joes are stronger, more resilient, have more, I don't know, American know-how, or whatever kind of protagonist power label you want to give. So it does fall into the trope of the jock beating up the nerd. and that's like taking it to the extreme, but that's something that shows up in comics a lot. Like the evil genius gets beat up by Shazam, you know? The sorcerer with all of his spells and wisdom gets beaten by Superman. It's a continual thing throughout comics, and this kind of just builds on that. And it's not in a way that I want to hate on it. Like, obviously, I did enjoy reading this, and we're laughing about it pretty good. But I think I'm laughing at it in spite of, like, knowing that that tradition is something I really dislike in comics. Like, I really don't like. But, like, I don't know. It's hard for me to articulate.
Well, I think what's unique, like, the dynamic here is, it's obviously, like, everybody in Cobra individually is very, very competent and very good. And on a one-on-one fight, they would almost all of them would universally just wreck whatever Joe you put up against them, right? Like, and that's a pretty universal trend. But their sort of infighting and this sort of power struggle and like all this stuff is just enough of a flaw where it puts them on equal footing, because the G.I. Joe guys obviously, you know, are a well-oiled machine. You know, they're an elite military unit that's just unwavering, and like, you know, like their commitment to each other and blah blah blah. It's all like ironclad, right? There's no infighting, and there's no egos. That's another thing. Despite the fact that some of the characters are larger than life, like their egos don't clash ever.
Yeah, they're here to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. You get that real sense, and so even though like. I mean, they're pretty much, like, the best for what they're supposed to do. But that's because they work well together. Whereas Cobra, it's just, like, any one of those individuals would be the most capable person in whatever it is that they do. And they would stomp anybody in a one-on-one confrontation and outwit them, etc., whatever. But it's just their infighting and their constant sabotage of each other and all this other stuff that just, like, kind of keeps them from ever really... getting traction. I don't know. It's
kind of
crazy.
Yeah, but, you know,
I mean, that's just the dynamic.
I think you're right, and I think it's highlighted too in issue 21, the silent issue. That like not only is it that the Cobras lack the teamwork, but that the G.I. Joes, that's their strength above all. like, the whole reason that Scarlet gets rescued is because she trusts Snake Eyes. Especially at the end there when Storm Shadow throws the sword. And she, like, comes down right in front of him and she trusts him to be able to catch it. And I don't know if she knew that was what was going to happen, but the trust between the two of them to get out of that situation together is what made it work. Like, not just that Cobra has shitty teamwork, but the Joes have great, like, they're the opposite ends of the spectrum. There's not one on the end and one in the middle. They're both on the ends. Like, I saw that, I was like, I would not have done that, girl. I would have just flown the fuck away and been like, I hope you brought a parachute.
All right. And then on the flip side of that, it's infighting and bungling and all that other stuff that gets Cobra Commander captured by G.I. Joe.
Yeah, it's blood. Parachute. It's blood. Like putting a tracker on Storm Shadow. Like, yeah. What?
Which he knows about. You find that out later. He's perfectly aware of what happened there. It's just, there's just little tiny bits of, like, purposeful sabotage. And it all just kind of culminates. And then, like, you'll have a big blunder. Like, oh, Cobra Commander got kidnapped.
Yeah. It does remind me of the Sith in the Old Republic, who would be incredible, except the whole point of the Sith is that you kill your master. So they're just, like, they're defeating their own power base continually. And then the Klingons in Star Trek, who would be amazeballs, but they're constantly at civil war between the houses. It's like, it's the flaw of the stronger than the humans. The other thing I did want to bring up, because I mentioned Scarlet in issue 21, the thing that did bother me as I was reading this is that I know this was printed in, what, early 80s, I want to say? So I don't want to get too much of a feminist hat on because you do contextualize things. But man, CoverGirl, like, the entire point of her existence was to be eye candy. And Scarlet's capable, except everybody else is named after their strength, named after their specialty. She's named after her hair color, which is the most surface superficial thing. So, like, I don't want to go too far down this road because it was early 80s and not that you want to give things a pass, but you have to understand the context in which they were created. But that was hard for me to read because I was like, come on, guys, try a little bit to have one female character who's competent at something other than looking hot or having red hair. Like, Baroness was the most feminist character here.
In defense of G.I. Joe, it gets better as the series continues and as the franchise, I guess, goes into the future. It does get better, but yeah, it's definitely pretty bad in this. I think the other major female Joe is named Lady J. So yeah, I mean, it's not great.
Yeah,
I mean, it's very clearly a product of its time, and like the portrayal of all the men too. Right, they're all, I guess they would be burly because they are like Marines, but there is like this hyper masculinity to it, and being like, this is what, you know, a man should look like and be like and act like for the Joes. Whereas like Cobra Commander is kind of scrawny comparatively. Mm-hmm. And Zartan and Destro are really weird looking. So, you know, you have this, like, good guys paired with, like, this very idealized version of masculinity. And then, of course, there's, like, also all the weird race things. Like, it is a very, very, very white comic.
Yeah.
And we have, like, magical Asian people. That's always fun. That comes, like, more in, like, past the issues that we read. I skimmed a bit, and it's like, oh, here's this trope. But, I mean, when was this written, right? Like, there is something to the fact that we're like, oh, this is, like, pretty out there in terms of acceptability. But that, I think, also just shows, like, how far past this we've moved. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So this issue, number 21, came out in March of 1984.
Yeah, it's older than me, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's older than me, too. The cartoon is, like, pr- predates me by a couple years. I think it started in like 82. So it's, I mean, by the time I was old enough to watch the cartoon, it was reruns, and then it was done already. And I think what's really strange is that, I would still watch, I could still catch some Transformers, and then they would throw on the G.I. Joe PSAs, but where would I even find, I wanted to watch G.I. Joe at one point, it was just not on TV anymore. And I'm but the PSAs stayed on TV into the 90s. I'm not even joking about that either. And it's what? And I was all right, cool, we got the PSAs, let's see some cartoons. I wanted to watch it, because I remember watching a couple of them, and then it disappeared. Because maybe it was literally 5, 6, 7 years old by the time I was just starting to be old enough to really watch cartoons regularly. And it was already kind of on its way out. So I always thought that was really, it's just barely kind of outside of my normal lexicon. That's why I never of these 3 weeks we've been doing these sort of 80s franchises, G.I. Joe's the one I'm pretty the least familiar with, not because I didn't want to watch it, but because it almost ran its course by the time I was old enough to appreciate it,
Yeah.
So and I
think
it's got a couple of the other stuff that we've been checking out.
I think that PSA running into the 90s is probably mostly, I would say, because this is a toy-based franchise, and that's something I don't think we see that much anymore, where they make the toy first and then the creative content. Usually, I think nowadays they happen hand in hand. Nowadays, you see a movie and there's characters that were created with toys in mind, blah, blah, blah. The example everybody likes to give is Jar Jar, at least in the circles I run in. But, that's not the only example that's out there. But G.I. Joe, I think, they were created as a toy line first and sold as toys, and they're like, could we make a cartoon? We can do that, right? What makes me laugh is I can't even imagine that nowadays. Just walking by, hey, that's a cool guy with a gun. I'm going to buy an action figure. Even as a kid, I don't think I would have done that. I don't know.
I was pretty into G.I. Joe when I was a kid.
Had you watched the cartoons, or were you just that's a cool looking bro?
I watched the cartoon, but it was kind of one of those things where, I would watch it whenever it was on. I didn't have any concept of continuity or anything.
Yeah.
I watched the movie over and over again, the 80s animated movie, and I had a bunch of the action figures. I don't really know, I don't know that much about the continuity and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of in the same boat. I had a couple episodes, I had a couple of the action figures, and they're pretty rad, but I didn't understand what made those. They don't really stand out in my mind. I had this guy or I had that guy. I didn't have that concept like I did for Transformers or Ninja Turtles, where it was I knew the character, I knew why I had that action figure. There wasn't the weird mystery surrounding it. Or I should say with the other stuff, but with G.I. Joe, it was kind of I have this, but I don't have a ton of context for who this person is, what their personality is like, where, you know what I mean, what they did in the cartoon, because it just didn't have a chance to get a lot of exposure to it until years and years later. And even then, it was kind of one of those things where I was able to kind of relate to the G.I. Joe cartoon later because it had some parallels with Transformers, which I was very familiar with. So any fondness I still have for G.I. Joe is kind of because it's loosely tied to Transformers. And I mean, obviously, they've even gone so far as to, cross up the two and do all sorts of crazy stuff there. But yeah, it was the cartoon that kind of got away from me growing up.
I wonder if the toy aspect of it is what led to a lot of the character design, how these guys they're so specialized in what they do. Roadblock is a soldier, but he's really good at shooting that one gun. And Gung-Ho is good, but he's really good at having that mortar. And Snowjob is good, but he's really good at hanging out in the snow. I think that might be why
if you want the 50 cal gun to go anywhere in your play area, you got to get your roadblock.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're definitely that's definitely the case, because I remember having figures that, like, buying figures because I thought they were cool or they came with cool, like, accessories, but I never saw them in the show.
I do that now. I go to Dollar Tree and they have generic wrestling action figures, but I buy them because they come with ladders and chairs. But is that also why these people, do any of these people have real names, or?
So what was cool about G.I. Joe action figures is they came with, like, a character file on the back of the cardboard backing, because it was like a blister, right?
Yeah.
And it had a cardboard back, and you could cut out this little file card that had, like, the characters. Sometimes it had the character's name, sometimes it didn't.
This is the era of action figures into cartoons.
Yeah.
So if the action figure was successful enough, they're like, okay, we're going to make cartoon, or use that as a marketing tool, right? Which is why, like, all the characters, you know, obviously, if you're making an action figure, like, every character needs to stand out. Every character needs to pop, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, and then they would create these bios where it was like, they give them these larger than life personalities to kind of match this outrageous look or this unique, you know, just flair that each character had, right? And yeah. They did that with, like, everything was like that at the time. Transformers was like that. I mean, what David's describing is, like, exactly what they did with the Transformers stuff. I mean, it's almost weird because they almost, like, gave some of the characters too much personality. Like, they almost had to dial it back in the cartoons sometimes, like, just because it was blistered. It's like, this character likes to...
long walks on the beach.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I mean, like, the little info cards even listed their military rank. So, like, it would say, like, this character who, like, there's a character named Jinx. I'm just looking at the G.I. Joe wiki, and she's a ninja. She's a good guy ninja. And apparently she's a sergeant in the U.S. Army also.
I'm imagining the back of Snake Eyes is just all unknown.
There's probably a lot there.
And we also have to think about this too. G.I. Joe is like a franchise that goes back like a long time.
Yeah.
Like, this is like kind of a reboot of in a sort. Because, like, old school G.I. Joe toys were like, you know, 10-inch figures that were like counterparts like Barbie dolls. And like, but they were like based on real military stuff. Right? Whereas this is sort of like, let's take that and let's make it just give it maybe like just like a dash of James Bond and a dash of, like, you know, science fiction and a dash of this.
And just put the villains at 11.
Yes, exactly. It's like everything is like over the top and just run with it. And that was a recipe for success. I mean, it's made an obviously a lasting impression on popular culture and all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah. So Jen, I'm willing to bet that you're the one who put that note in about the names.
Yes.
It looks like your kind of note.
Yep. Although, wouldn't it be so much better if those actually were their names?
Yes. Hey, Duke. Hey, Roadblock.
Andy, you could name your son Snowjob.
No. Because that's not a G.I. Joe. That's something in Urban Dictionary. No, we were gonna name my daughter her current first name and her middle name Barbara until we realized that would make the initials BBW. And it was a really awkward moment when we realized that, as we were kind of talking about it, and it was my wife and I on a Skype call with my parents, and I was like, "Oh no, we can't do that." And my wife was like, "Why?" My dad was like, "Google it." I'm like, "No, Dad, I don't need you to." Oh God, I didn't need to know that about you, Dad. Yeah, but the drone names are pretty good. They're pretty great. No, I'd go Slagathor if I were going to name my kid something random.
Yeah, there you go.
A little slaggy.
Who was the deep sea diving guy? I forget his name. He had a great
deep six.
Deep six.
That's right.
Deep six. Yes.
He may not even be human to you.
That is he's got his such ways. A fucking Urban Dictionary name. Let's be real.
Right. That's a much better way to read these names. Like, how many of these are actually sex acts?
Okay, I'm not gonna lie. When I first started like it's looking at all the names, I was like, Jesus Christ, we have like, you know, Cleveland Steamer and Rusty Trombone over here. Like, that was actually my first thought. It's, oh God, the names are so bad.
If you had to like create like a game for millennials that was called like Porn Star or Famous Cartoons.
Porn Star or G.I. Joe.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, that would be perfect. You know, it'd be great for somebody who just didn't know better or didn't grow up with it.
I'm gonna make a list and I'm gonna bring it to the show next week and I'm gonna make David and Jen play it.
Oh God!
Yeah, I got some the GameStar Figment has some younger employees that are, you know, they're adults but they're, you know, obviously they're more like my brother's age, so they're like 12, 10 or so years younger than me. And I refer to them as my kids jokingly because they're that much younger than me. And so I, this is something I would bring to them. Just be like, all right, Snow John, G.I. Joe or Porn Star?
You should definitely do that. Hey, should we talk about the art? I feel like we have to talk about the art because a fifth of this was that first issue with no text. And I think that was the genesis of the whole "enough said" kind of a thing that went through Marvel, started here. And this is one of the classic all-time comic book comics. No, I don't think necessarily because it's so phenomenal. It's definitely really, really good. But because it started that trend, and it's like the idea that you can tell an entire story without any dialogue or any text boxes. There's a little bit of words here in some places. Like, I think when Destro sees the computer, and it's like, chance of success, 0.000018. And you're like, nah. I think that's about the extent of it in terms of text, but otherwise, this is all just masterful, how you draw action, how you let the reader fill in the gutter between panels. Like, that's really, really good artwork.
Yeah, it really made an impact. Because I've never read any of these comics before. And I read that, and I went, well, that's new. Like, that just, in my own head, I was just like, that is completely new to me. Like, I just, like, like, I buy a comic book from the grocery store because that's where you would have bought it back at that time because you still could then. And you flip through that and you were just like, I would be both A, blown away, and two, pissed because it would take me about 30 seconds to flip through the damn thing. Right?
Yeah. And I think like, that's also great. I think that's also why this is so notable, because this is at the tail end of the era of super, super wordy comics. I'm thinking about when we did Galactus, the original Fantastic Four comics, were super wordy. We've read some X-Men stuff that's like, my God. Some of the old Iron Man that we've read. If you go back and find any old comics from before, like 1980, it is super, super wordy. I think because exactly what you're saying, Gemini, people wanted to buy a single issue, get an entire story, and make sure they got their money's worth out of it. That and the art, the printing kind of sucked, so you had to rely on the text a lot more than the art. But I think this is like, this is one of the signal flares in the industry that things are starting to change and you can do so much more visually and maybe try to actually make comics more like this. Not necessarily this far, but showing what you could do.
Yeah, I hear you. It was a great way to kind of kick this off and get you engaged in the story arc and into this trade specific, because you're just like, I don't know what to expect going into this, you know, like, you know, let's see what's going on. And it just like, oh, right off the bat, rescue scene, crazy castle, da, 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 this is happening, there's a ninja, holy shit, fucking this, oh my God, you know, it's just like, you just, it's just all in your face, and then it's over, and then it's like, and then everything kind of, and then they kind of like settle in, like, okay, now we're talking, now we're going to be like, you know, now we're going to get into the...
Yeah. Yeah, and the end of this one, like, I do like how it feels like a crescendo too, because it's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And the idea is, at the end, I was like, motherfucker caught a sword. All right, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
But I mean, the art, to the credit of this editorial team, I guess I'll say, there were a lot of artists in this throughout even the 10 issues of this, and It feels pretty consistent, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest changeover, which if you read the first five and then you read the 6 through 10, I think there's a changeover. And I think that's the most obvious switch that I could tell personally, just from my naked eye. It's like, okay, there's an art change over here, or there's an artist change over here. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Like, other than that, like, if there was any other changeovers or, like, handoffs, like, got me. I wouldn't have even known.
Nice. Nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, should we rate this bad boy?
Sure.
Sure.
All right. Before we do that, though, I want to take a moment to thank everybody who created this comic, including Larry Hama, who wrote this motherfucker for like a decade or more, I want to say. and like I mentioned a minute ago, I would mention the artist, but there's literally more than one per issue. So all of them, George Rosas doing the colors, Rick Parker doing the letters, Dennis O'Neill and Justin Eisinger for being editors, and everybody else who made this thing 30 years ago now, 35 years ago. Everybody who made this, everybody who got it into my hands after that, everybody who worked to print it again so I could read this 35 years later. Like, there's so many times we want to read comics and we can't because they're unavailable. Like, we got this. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for creating this and making sure it could get into our hands to read, because we can sit here and talk about comics, we can rate them, we can critique them, but we wouldn't be able to do any of that if it hadn't gotten made. So thank all of you. And I, in the striking turn, am going to go first. When I finished reading this, at first I wanted to give it a 2.5. Because I was like, that was all right. But the more we've talked about it, it's fun. And there's a lot of things that, as you're reading, don't stick with you, but you can remember it, and it's fun. And I feel like, as much as I'm here nor there, and as much as the contextual, cultural problems that there are in this comic, I feel like the highlight of this book is not in the reading of it, but in the talking about it, and giggling over stuff, and laughing at things, and being like, did you catch that in that panel? What was this Joe doing? Like, it's the being able to have the discussion. So I'm going to give it more than a 2.5, because as much as I like to be all reader responsey and say that the comic is the comic is the comic and what you get out of it is what you get out of it, but the part of the experience is talking about it with somebody else. So I'm going to go ahead and throw that ball in here. And I'm going to bump this up to a 3.5. 3.5, sure, why not? Full point, because I was ready to just call this average, but I had a really good time talking about it, so 3.5. Jen, how about you go next?
I'm also gonna do 3.5. This shit was whack. My god, this comic. I honestly went in expecting to be really bored. And, you know, just be like, okay, it's a bad, like, 70s, 80s action comic. No, this is absurd to the point where it seems like a bit of a satire on the genre, and I like that. It's also really obvious that it is a product of its time, which dings it down, because, you know, there is like that level of too much text and simplicity and over explaining of things, but, you know, issue 21 was really well done. Like, in addition to conveying, you know, the macro part of the battle, they had like just these little things, like, you know, they showed you what kind of personality Scarlet has when she bites, you know, the ninja. And then later, I forget his name. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But then later, it's like, oh, he has blue eyes. Ninjas don't have blue eyes. He's a white man, you know. Yes. Right. But it's meant to be like, here's an important part of the story that we think you need to know because it's going to be significant later. Mm-hmm. And while that's kind of a weird thing today because it calls out like this racial difference, you know, back then it was just like taking a well-paced frame to show the reader that there was something amiss. So, I mean, that issue was really cool. And I just really like the absurdity of all these crazy people and their crazy names and their weird quips. Like, it's like this comic turns it up to 11 in a good way. So yeah, 3.5.
All right. David, how about you up?
Well, yeah, I think I'm going to go with 3.5 as well. I mean, I have a strong nostalgic feeling for G.I. Joe because when I was a kid, it was one of the things that I spent a lot of time, you know, playing with the toys, and I watched the show when I could and stuff. And in the last few years, I've been picking up the IDW's G.I. Joe Classics, which trades, which are like 10 issues of the Larry Hama run. And, you know, it's not the best comic in the world, but it's like Jen said, it's fun, and it's a product of its time, and it's not bad, though. I mean, I think the comic does a good job of surprising the reader. If you don't, even somebody who watched the cartoon a lot, I think that the story in the comics is a lot more cohesive and less wacky, which is hard to believe because this is pretty wacky. But yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I liked reading it. And, you know, in particular, this, if you're going to read one issue of G.I. Joe, read issue 21. Because, like Andy said, it's a pretty significant comic for its time. So, yeah, I'm going to go with 3.5.
All right. Jiminy, I'm going to put you up last, but I want to let you know, the last two episodes that you've been on, we've had a high rating and a low rating. And both times you gave a 3.75. So now that we've got a unanimous 3.5, so you could just go along with the flow, or you can be like, no, this was my jam. I'm going to give it that 0.25 extra. Or rate it whatever the hell you want. I just thought it'd be fun to give you that context. Because both times you were like, I don't know. I kind of feel like here. I'm going to go, Both times you're like, I'm going to slide right between. So here we go. I'm excited to hear what you say.
Well, okay. I mean, you might be a little smart. I'm not going to give it the J Money bump. So I'm going to go with 3.5 on this as well. I'll contextualize that. I mean, of the three of these last 3 weeks, this is probably the one I was the least excited to read initially, but it was the one that, even though it was crazy long, and I read all 10, like I went start to finish, I couldn't stop reading it, for one. And after we're talking about it, like, there was tons of good, memorable moments in this. Yeah, it's a product of its time, which, I mean, if you see that as a flaw, that's fine. But, I mean, like, it honestly, if I were to, like, compare, let's say, like, I don't know, military attitudes of that day and, like, match it up with this, this is probably significantly muted, even with, like, you know, Cover Girl being kind of ridiculous, and, like, basically everybody Asian being ninjas. That was a little bit obnoxious. I'll give you that. But then progressive in other ways. Like, Roadblock, for the most part, he was, like, a pretty sophisticated guy. And, like, you know what I mean? And I don't know if they were trying to be, like, you know, oh, you think this black guy is going to be like a black guy? Like, no, he's really sophisticated, too. You know, like, I don't know if they were trying to do that in spite of that. Like, you know, I don't know. But, like, It was like, there was a lot of, like, just sensational moments. It was really crazy, but it was super memorable. Everything flowed. And they could go, they basically went all over the freaking world in this.
Mm-hmm. That's like, true.
From 21 to 30, like, they go all over the place. And the crazy part is they kind of, like, it kind of comes full circle, which is pretty cool. Because, like, 21, obviously there's that rescue, but 22, they're, like, at the base, rebuilding their base from a previous attack that messed them up, right?
Oh, yeah. It's got that sweet old-school style page where it shows you the base and labels everything. Forgot about that.
Yeah, and it basically comes full circle by the end. Spoilers. Sorry, guys. But even by saying that, it's I'm sure, like, if you're compelled to keep reading this, it's not going to really spoil it. You're going to be, like, just as pleasantly surprised as anything else you've read in this. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to stay with 3.5 because obviously, I don't have a ton of nostalgia for G.I. Joe. And like, coming into it, I was like, okay, you know, give it a shot. But, like, reading it was like, okay, this is good. But it's a different kind of good than what we've read the last 2 weeks. Like, you know, with Turtles, you have this, like, sort of modern writing sensibility where it was just like, you know, it was a complete sort of work of art, if you will. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Even if I did have my beef with it, with certain aspects of it, but only how it compared to its original stuff. And with Transformers, it was like, there was only like two or three really intense moments to the whole thing. Really, it was just nostalgia keeping me really dialed in on it. Like, I was excited to see those characters again, and I was excited to see them in this, like, a different take, so to speak. But, like, with G.I. Joe, it was like, this is G.I. Joe in its element. Like, all the characters are who they are. Mm-hmm. It's different enough from the cartoon. I think this is way more interesting than the cartoon. The cartoon is just, like, every week, let's get in crazy vehicles and shoot at each other. And these characters are going to act very predictably, and those characters are going to act very predictably, and rinse and repeat. Maybe you got like a couple like story arcs that run two or three episodes long, but it's not deep, right? And this is pretty deep. Like, you're just, you know, like you're in for an adventure. Like, you know that if you pick up the next issue, like, we're picking up where we left off, we're going on this ride, let's keep it going. Right, and you just get that feeling the whole way. This was like 230 pages or something. And it's just like, man. I mean, it was a long read. It took me about 2 days to get through, whereas the other two took me like half an hour to finish. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like a good time sink for reading, but it was thorough, and I don't know. It achieved something I didn't think it would for me, which was to keep me engaged.
I feel like we all had the same kind of reaction where this came up and sort of surprised us a little bit. That's always a nice feeling.
It's like the dark horse of this like three week block, if you will.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jaminy, for joining us for those three episodes. It was nice to chat with you again.
Hey, thanks,
buddy.
Man.
Hey, thanks, buddy. If our listeners want to follow you, where can they find you at?
I mean, if they want to be disappointed that I never streamed, they could go to my Twitch channel, which is Tom Geycott, COG, TomGeycottCog. That's twitch.tv/that. Otherwise, I'm pretty much absent from the internet, so don't look for me.
Don't find me, I'll find you.
And eventually, when I kind of get back into like a gaming thing again, I'll probably start streaming. So just
nice.
Summer's just brutal because I don't like sitting behind a computer. It's gross because it's hot, and then I can't have a lot of background noise from fans and stuff when I'm streaming. So it's like,
yeah, well,
it's just unpleasant
when you live in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, in a cheap apartment with a crappy AC. Yeah, you kind of gotta.
There's some things you gotta slog through. Stuff. Yeah.
But I mean, probably by the fall, I'll probably start picking up once the cool weather starts.
All right. In the meantime, if you want to follow me, I'm at Jolly Andy. You can find me on Twitch, Twitter, that kind of stuff. You can follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at Welcome to Comics. You can go to welcometocomics.com and on the right hit the button that says past episodes and listen to all of our previous 322 bad boys. I don't know why I said it like that. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/welcometocomics. Welcome to Comics everywhere. Pretty much try that first. And if that doesn't work, try Jolly Andy. That wraps this up for our 80s series. Next week, we're going to start something I've called Marvel Misses, but like not like hit and miss, but like misses as in like ladies. Because Marvel has been, I think it was 7-8 years ago, they came out at Comic-Con and made a big to-do about how they were going to make a focused effort to add more female characters into their lineup and add more diversity into the Marvel Universe. And I think for the most part, they've done that to varying degrees of success. And we've covered a lot of that. We've covered Ms. Marvel, Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur. Just recently we did the Kate Bishop. But I want to look at a couple more of these in the context of some of those conversations we've had before. So we're going to talk about Invincible, Iron Man, Ironheart, Riri Williams, which is when Riri Williams became Iron Man. America, The Life and Times of America Chavez. Partially for this discussion, partially because I really want to read that comic. It's been on my list for a long time. I love America Chavez. And I want to talk about it with other people. And last, we're going to do Mockingbird, I Can Explain. These all look like really fun comics, but they all also feel like they fit the Marvel formula of we need to whip out a comic with a lady in it and get it on the stands. So I want to take a look at these, and in that context of, was this produced to add diversity, or was this produced out of creative need, or could it have been both? I want to have that discussion. So we're going to start next week with Invincible, Iron Man, Ironheart, Riri Williams.
And if you forgot all of that, you can go to welcometocomics.com on the right, hit future shows, and we have this whole run up there with links to Amazon and the exact trades we're going to be reading and what shows we have coming up after this, so you can read along and listen. All right. That's it for this week then, everybody. Until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.